The Beautiful and the Damned. Angry Goddesses. Actaeon. The Cadmean House was one of the most important dynasties of the Greek world. As founder of Thebes and bringer of the alphabet, the role of Cadmus and his family was central in the making of Greece. But like many of the great houses, there was a curse attached to it. The killing of the water dragon allowed the city to be built, but it cast the curse of Ares over it too. The fates seldom allowed glory and triumph without the accompaniment of suffering and sorrow. Cadmus's daughter Autonoe had a son Actaeon by a minor god called Aristaeus, much venerated in Boeotia. Aristaeus is sometimes referred to as the Apollo of the fields. Like many of the later heroes, Actaeon was tutored and trained by the great and wise centaur Chiron. He grew up to become a much admired huntsman and leader, renowned for his fearlessness in the chase and the skill and tender strength with which he handled his beloved hounds. One day, having lost the scent of an especially noble stag, Actaeon and his fellow huntsmen separated to pick up the trail. Stumbling through some bushes, Actaeon happened on a pool where Artemis was bathing. As she was the goddess of his favourite pursuit, hunting, Actaeon should have known better than to stare dumbstruck at her nakedness. She was also the fierce queen of celibacy, chastity, and virginity. But so beautiful was she, so much more lovely than any being Actaeon had ever beheld, that he stood rooted to the spot, his mouth open and his eyes, and not only his eyes, bulging. It may have been a twig snapping beneath his foot, it may have been the sound of Actaeon's drool hitting the ground, but something made Artemis turn. She saw a young man standing there, ogling, and her blood was fired. The thought of anyone spreading the word that they had seen her naked was so abhorrent to her that she called out, "You, mortal man, your staring is a profanity. I forbid you ever to speak. If you utter just one syllable, your punishment will be terrible. Indicate to me that you understand." The unhappy youth nodded. Artemis disappeared from view, and he was left alone to consider his fate. Behind him, a halloo started up as his fellow huntsmen announced that they were once more upon the scent. Instinctively, Actaeon called out. The moment he did so, Artemis's curse descended, and he was changed into a stag. The hunter hunted. Actaeon raised his head, now heavy with antlers, and galloped through the woods until he came to a pool of water. He looked down into the pool, and at the sight of himself gave what should have been a groan, but which came out as a mighty bellow. The bellow was answered by a great baying and yipping. Within seconds, his own pack of hounds had streamed into the clearing. They had been trained by Actaeon himself to rip out a stag's throat and feast on its steaming blood for their reward. As the yowling and snarling creatures leapt up at him, snapping their jaws, Actaeon raised his forelegs in the direction of Olympus, as if beseeching the gods for pity. They either did not hear or did not heed. In seconds, he was torn to pieces. If you want to impress your friends, you can learn this list of the male and female hounds, as given by Ovid. If nothing else, they might serve as useful names for online passwords. Dogs, Melampus, Icnobates, Pamphagos, Dorcius, Oribasos, Nebrophonos, Lilaps, Theron, Pterilas, Hylaeus, Ladon, Dromus, Tigris, Leucon, Asbolos, Lacon, Aello, Thoas, Harpalos, Menelaus, Labros, Arcus, Argiodus, Hylactor. Bitches, Argre, Nape, Pimenis, Apaia, Canake, Stictae, Alce, Lysisse, Lacne, Melanchites, Therodomas, Orisitrophos. Erisichthon. The goddess Demeter is associated with fruitful abundance and the generous bounty of nature, but if pushed beyond her usual forbearance, she could be as vengeful as Artemis, as this tale of her ruthless punishment of Erisichthon, king of Thessaly, clearly shows. In need of timber for the construction of new apartments in his palace, the bold, fearless, and impatient Erisichthon led a party of woodmen out to the forest, where they came upon a flourishing grove of oaks. "Excellent!" he cried. "Swing your axes, boys!" But his men drew back, muttering and shaking their heads. Erisichthon turned to his foreman. "What's the matter with them?" "Those trees are sacred to Demeter, sire." "Nonsense! She has more than she knows what to do with. Bring them down." More muttering. Erisichthon snatched the foreman's whip, which its owner only ever really waved for show, and cracked it menacingly over the heads of the foresters. "Chop those trees down, or feel its sting," he cried. With their king cracking the whip and urging them on, the men reluctantly chopped down the trees. But when they came to a giant oak that stood alone at the end of the grove, they stopped again. "Why, this is the tallest and broadest of them all," said Erisichthon. "That alone can provide timber for the rafters and columns of my throne room, and still leave enough over for a great bed for me." The foreman pointed a trembling finger at the oak's branches, which were hung with garlands. The king was unimpressed. "And?" "My lord," whispered the foreman, "each wreath stands for a prayer that the goddess has answered." "If the prayers have already been answered, she will have no need of flower arrangements. Cut it down." But seeing that the foreman and his men were too afraid to proceed, the impetuous Erisichthon snatched up an axe and set about it himself. He was a strong man, and like most rulers, he loved to show off his will, skill, and sinew. It was not long before the trunk creaked and the mighty oak began to sway. Did Erisichthon hear the plaintive cries of a hamadryad in the boughs? If he did, he paid no heed, but swung his axe again and again, until down crashed the tree, branches, votive wreaths, garlands, hamadryad, and all. As the oak died, so died its hamadryad. With her last breath, she cursed Erisichthon for his crime. Demeter heard of Erisichthon's sacrilege and sent word to Limos. Limos was one of the vile creatures that had flown from Pandora's jar. She was a demon of famine who might be regarded as Demeter's inverse, the goddess's necessary opposite in the mortal world. One, the fecund and bountiful herald of the harvest, the other, the mercilessly cruel harbinger of hunger and blight. Since the two existed in an irreconcilable matter-antimatter relationship, they could never meet in person. So Demeter sent a nymph of the mountains as her envoy to urge Limos to deliver the Hamadryad's curse on Erisichthon, a task the malevolent demon was only too happy to undertake. Limos had, according to Ovid, rather let herself go, with sagging, withered breasts, an empty space for a stomach, exposed rotten bowels, sunken eyes, crusted lips, scaly skin, lank, scurfy hair, and swollen, pustular ankles, the face and figure of famine, presented a haunting and dreadful spectacle. Lemos stole that night into Erisichthon's bedroom, took the sleeping king in her arms, and breathed her foul breath into him. Her poison fumes seeped into his mouth, throat, and lungs, through his veins, and into every cell of his body slid the terrible, insatiable worm of hunger. Erisichthon awoke from strange dreams, feeling very, very peckish. He surprised his kitchen staff with an enormous breakfast order. He consumed every morsel, yet still his appetite was unsated. All day he found that the more he ate, the more ravenous he became. As days and then weeks passed, the pangs of hunger gnawed deeper and deeper. No matter how much he consumed, he could never be satisfied nor gain so much as an ounce of weight. Food inside him acted like fuel on a fire, causing the hunger to burn ever more fiercely. For this reason, his people began referring to him behind his back as Ethon, which means burning. He was, perhaps, the first man ever to eat himself out of house and home. One by one, all his treasure and possessions and even his palace were sold off to buy food. But still this wasn't enough, for nothing could appease his colossal appetite. At last he was reduced to selling his daughter Mestra to raise money to quieten the remorseless demands of his unassuageable appetite. This was a more cunning and less barbarous act than perhaps it sounds. The beautiful Mestra had once been a lover of Poseidon's, who had rewarded her with the ability to alter her shape at will, a power in the especial gift of the god of the ever-changing sea. Every week, Erisichthon would offer his daughter to a rich suitor and accept the bride money. Mestra would accompany her fiancé to his home, escape in the shape of one animal or another, and return to Erisichthon, ready to be sold again to a fresh, gullible suitor. Even this arrangement proved insufficient to tamp down the dreadful flames of hunger. And in desperation one day, he chewed off his left hand. The arm followed, then his shoulder, feet, and hams. Before long, King Erisichthon of Thessaly had eaten himself all up. Demeter and the Hamadryad were avenged.